Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults. Here are your hosts, Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I'm Sandy Fowler, still running solo today. If you're wondering where Judy is, check out our support page on mightyparenting.com. There is an explanation there. And while you're there, be sure to check out the other things we have for you, including our free email series on communicating with your teen. And speaking of communicating, we're going to be communicating today. We're going to be talking about boys. And one of my big concerns is that boys are being overlooked and left behind. When issues or concerns come up, they're often focused around girls and around women, even though the problem affects men. So, for example, let's take something like dating violence or abused partners, abused spouses as an example. People jump to the idea in the discussion about women being abused. And while that's true and it's a problem and something that needs to be addressed, men are being abused too. And that is a problem and it needs to be addressed as well. Body image, eating disorder conversations, those are all primarily focused on girls, but boys face these issues too. If you listen to our episode on body image, we got into that because that was one of the things I noticed is the conversation kept veering girls, girls, girls. And I'm like, but these are issues for our boys too. You know, and I hear parents, they'll complain about Barbie dolls and the skin suits of the voluptuous superhero women. But boys are faced with stereotypes there too, right? They're this broad-shouldered, narrowed-hip, muscular, unrealistic ideals that they're expected to live up to as well. And I'm kind of trying to keep myself calm here because I do tend to get worked up about this and I don't want to pull out a soapbox. And I have to say, you know, people tell me it's a little ironic because I am the mother of two girls. But, you know, maybe that just gives me another perspective to see these issues from. So, being that this is something that I get all heated up about, and Judy also is bothered by it, and she is the mother of a son, when Janet Allison reached out to us, Judy and I jumped at the chance to have her on the show to talk about our boys. And Janet is well-versed to do this. She's a veteran educator. She is an author. She is a family coach. She is the founder of Boys Alive and the co-host of the On Boys podcast. And she is here today to help us understand what's happening to our wonderful young men and what we can do to help them out. So Janet, welcome to Mighty Parenting.
So happy to be here. Excited for this conversation.
I am too, and we had a little trouble getting ourselves coordinated with things happening here and there. So this is definitely been bubbling and brewing, and you are such a staunch advocate for boys. You know how they learn and how they communicate. You have been advocating for them about these things for over 20 years. So what I want to know is, what happens when we don't recognize that our boys do things differently and need different things from us? What happens to our boys?
Oh boy. Well, first of all, I also raised girls. I didn't raise boys, but I was a teacher of many, many boys back in the mid 90s. So I've been watching the boys growing up for a really long time. And I think that we are seeing what happens when we don't recognize that boys and girls are inherently different, much the same, and also we do need to recognize that maybe we're talking apples and oranges here. And when we can recognize that, when we can see that, oh, you know, boys have primarily female teachers in their early years. So preschool, maybe their care provider is likely female. Their elementary school teachers are female. And it might be middle school before they have a male teacher. And it's a mismatch. Even if it's a teacher, female teacher that gets boys, it's still a mismatch. As human beings, you know, we gravitate towards those people that are familiar and comfortable. And boys go to school every day, and there is a female teacher in front of them. So there's already kind of an underlying mismatch. And when we can recognize that as the teachers, as the adults, then and begin to understand how boys operate in the world differently, how boys receive information and process it differently, then we as the adults around our boys can adjust our expectations and the way we deliver information, which in school is mostly auditory, and that is absolutely fundamentally not how most boys learn.
It's funny you're talking about that. When my girls were little, they were in a private school, which actually separated the kids by third grade. And at that point, there was a boys' building and a girls' building, mm-hmm. and they were all male teachers in the boys' building. Not even substitute teachers unless they were desperate, and then that was usually me because I was subbing when the girls were little. And it was so interesting to me to be in that building because it was just a different atmosphere. It wasn't wild and out of control. It was just different. And it was definitely more mobile. When I was teaching classes, it would go in and, you know, the boys would be like, well, you know, we played this game. And it was a lot of, they would play physical games, and it wasn't huge. Mm-hmm. It would just be like tossing a ball before giving an answer mm-hmm. or something like that. But it's just different than yes. working with the girls. And mm-hmm. and it seems to me, you said a couple of things. You said expectations. That was one. And in looking at, you know, what's happening to our boys when we aren't recognizing those differences, when we aren't delivering their information in a way that they need it, but we expect them to take everything in and be, quote unquote, well-behaved within a definition we've created that apparently we aren't taking into account what they need there either. It seems to me that they end up getting in trouble. They end up getting punished, but I'm kind of leaning toward more of how that would feel. You know, I'm putting myself in those shoes and going, yeah. if nobody's giving me anything I need and expecting me to, you know, maybe walk backwards all day long without running into anything, I can't do that.
No,
but it would make me feel like a failure, and it would make me feel miserable no matter how hard I tried.
Well, and one boy came home and told his mother in the spring of his first grade year, he's 7 years old, and he came home and he said, Mom, all the girls are perfect and I'm the bad one.
Oh, that breaks my heart.
Right? Yeah. Dr. Michael Thompson, who wrote Raising Cain, said that girl behavior is the gold standard in schools, and boys are treated like defective girls. Imagine going to school every single day and being just like you said it so well, of being told to walk backwards and don't run into anything all day long, every day. Not understanding how I communicate with my friends, not understanding that my body needs to move so that my brain will turn on. Because when my body's not moving, my brain is not working. And not understanding, you know, that I need recess. Don't take recess away from me. Feeling like you're always the one getting in trouble. Boys recognize that teachers favor the girls. They see it. They feel it, even if they can't articulate it. And recognizing, too, that males and females are on a different developmental trajectory. And we already know that newborn boys are about 2 weeks less mature than newborn girls. And that plays out right through, especially through early elementary. And it levels out at about age 30 when male brains are fully online. But in those early years, especially, our boys can be a year to a year and a half behind their chronological age. So we've said, you know, seven-year-olds should be in first grade and doing these things. And our boys are maybe six, maybe five and a half in their ability to self-regulate, to hold a pencil. And yet they're looking around them and they see that the girls are able to follow directions, sit still, hold their pencils, do all the little tiny fine motor skills. And so they're already feeling at that early age, I can't do what the world wants me to do. And we then wonder why we have teenagers who are checked out, you know, playing video games, because that is the easiest thing to do rather than engaging. And we have angry adults. We have angry men. So I think it starts so young, and we've got to have a revolution. We have got to change this. We are headed down the, you know, a horrible path. Who's doing the school shootings? It's not the girls. It's the boys. And it's, I just feel like there's this deep-seated anger and angst that we have got to start addressing. And it's that piece of feeling like you are not a match to your environment and you're being expected to do things that you simply physically, emotionally, mentally can't do in the way you're being asked to do it.
Yeah, there...
You said something about soapboxes earlier. I got my soapbox because this is, it is imperative that we start to change this.
Well, one of the things that you mentioned was anger, and depression is anger turned inward. Mm-hmm. And people ask Judy and myself, they will ask us, you know, why do we have this suicide epidemic? Why are so many of these kids depressed and anxious? And our answer back is there isn't just one thing, but there is one thing in that we have a cultural problem. And a lot of what you just said are things that we can impact, that we can address, that we can change. And it also goes to that our mighty parenting philosophy of live curious, not just go, my kid's not doing what I need them to do, or my kid's not doing what the school expects them to do, but to go, huh, what is my kid doing? What isn't my kid doing? And why is that? And one of the answers that you're telling us is that they're not doing that because they're not wired that way. They're not made that way.
Well, and part of that too, exactly. And part of that too is looking at your child and, you know, why aren't they doing that? Why can't they do that? Why aren't they in trouble? But what we have to do, and parents are the front line to this, is looking at the system around them, looking at the culture of education that we've created in just the last couple hundred years that is very feminine. It's that female perspective that doesn't fit boys. And so rather than looking at your son and seeing what's wrong and, oh my gosh, I've gotten another call from school and the, you know, he's in trouble again, is to open up our view and go, wait a minute, it's actually not my boy. My boy is fine. It is the expectations, the things like zero tolerance policies at schools, zero tolerance for physical touch, zero tolerance for writing about anything that's considered aggressive or quote unquote violent. You know, all the ways that boys communicate, we have zero tolerance policies for those. It would be like telling girls, sorry, you can't actually talk to each other. That's what we're doing to our boys.
And to one of the things that keeps going through my mind is, you know, I said I have two girls, and yet not everything, but a number of the things you've mentioned actually also apply to my daughter. So I just want to put out there that mm-hmm. we are using these two terms here, girls and boys, mm-hmm. and we are recognizing that not all boys need the same thing. Not all girls need the same thing, but just to simplify the conversation, we're gonna go with this girls and boys thing, because again, going back to mental wellness, one of the things that I have noticed in many suicide survivors in looking at artwork, whether it be drawings, paintings, music, poetry, stories from kids who have been treated for depression or anxiety, is, again, a lot of times you will get that darker side of things, mm-hmm. but not necessarily just in a bad way. You know, suicide survivors I talk to oftentimes, and also recovering addicts, I just noticed that there's a higher propensity there for what we would, you know, foul language. Mm-hmm. But it's part of how they release things. So yeah. like you said, you know, this is something that our boys will tend to do, not necessarily specifically foul language, but they have a different way of releasing things that are not necessarily acceptable in school and other environments as well. So let's talk first about a couple of the differences, because while we're going to, you know, advocate for our kids, the first place we can highly impact them, impact our boys, is at home by us understanding and accepting them. So you had talked about, in your work, you talked about how they communicate differently, and you mentioned that here too today. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how do our boys prefer to communicate?
Mm-hmm. And I will say, boys and men, this is a male tendency. And as you pointed out, it's not every male. And I also want to, you know, make a nod towards gender fluidity. So every person on the planet is different temperaments, gender, different gender identification, all of that. So just recognizing that, putting it out there, take what fits for your child, boy or girl, or anywhere in between. But a primary difference, and this is where parents can begin to adjust their communication style with their son or their daughter, is that boys tend to be more visual than verbal. And this plays out in many ways. So school is very much auditory. They're being talked to and talked at all day long. And many principals that I work with in schools that I go into, they, you know, what happens when the kids are sent to the principal's office? Well, and 95% of kids sent to the principal's office are boys. There's a big clue that something is wrong, not our boys, but our system. And in one school I was working with, they come in and they sit, and then they have to write down what they did, still sitting. So you've got already two strikes against the boy: sitting, no movement, expecting him to come up with words to describe what he did. And boys are, the whole verbal piece, they come to much later. Boys and men often do not use as many words to describe, or as many feeling kind of words to describe a situation. And as women, we love words, and we want all of the details. And that can drive our males a little bit crazy. They want, you know, give me the bullet points. I don't need all the filler. But as women, that's what we tend to do because we love it. We talk a lot and we do our processing outwardly. Many males do their processing inwardly. But as women who are in a male-female relationship, we get frustrated because he's not talking. We want to talk about that and he's not talking. And it might be the next day that he comes back with an answer, but we want it right now. So just understanding that the communication, the words might be fewer, the words might come later than you would like them to, and not with as much detail. And for women, what we can do is to adjust and begin to use fewer words. When you're giving directions, when you're asking a question, get to the essence and just take away all the fluff that's in that. Another thing that women often do is that we will ask our boys or our men a question, and we don't quite get the answer that we're looking for. So we'll ask again in a slightly different way. And when I do my speaking gigs, this always gets a chuckle from the men and the women in the audience because it's so familiar. And so to really begin to notice that in our communication patterns, am I pushing when he's resisting? And so for your sons, catching those opportunities when he is open to talking, often it will be when you are doing something together. So it might be you're going for a walk. Many, many moms will say, you know, when we're driving in the car, that's when my husband loves to talk. And so knowing that with your boy, do something, be active, and don't expect him to make eye contact with you. It's much better to be side by side, doing the dishes, playing with Legos, whatever you're doing. That means he's in motion, which means his brain is able to access the verbal centers more readily than, say, for women, we just can sit and talk and look at each other and we're happy. That's not such a comfortable way for many boys and men to communicate.
No, my husband and I actually discovered this way back when we were dating, back in the late 80s.
Good.
Whenever we had something difficult to discuss, we went for a walk. And it was an accidental discovery. You know, we met in college, so there we were outside a lot just because of the nature of life.
Right.
And you know, then we were graduating and planning the wedding and all these major life choices and things. And somewhere in there, one of us just realized that this went better when we were outside.
Yes. Walking.
And now you've given me all the reasons for it. And I mean, I've known that my husband needs to move, but this gives some other ideas and insights. And it also goes into the idea of playing with our kids. When they're teenagers, we don't think about, oh, we should play with our kids. But you know what? Play together. Like these things that you were saying, whether it's doing chores, do that together too. But that just being together, whether it's chores, transportation, or play, creates opportunities. The other thing I noticed in there is you said, be open when they're ready. Mm-hmm. And I love creating the opportunities for that. Also had run into this with one of my girls that she was always ready to be open and tell me whatever was going on at 10, 11 o'clock at night when I am an early to bed, early to rise person. And granted, you know, there were a lot more times that I was staying up later because I had teenagers, but you know, my body would happily be asleep by 10 o'clock and, you know, up at 5 or 5:30. So being open means to listen at that time when whatever it is. And then I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but what I might need to do is say, I heard what you said and I'm so tired that I can't give you an answer right now. I will get back with you tomorrow if they actually ask you something. And it may actually be helpful because most of the time they're not actually asking us anything. They just want us to listen and not have that conversation, right?
Exactly. I have so many teens and boys, tweens, that say they just want somebody to listen to them. And that's listening with no judgment, without that tape running through your head of, oh, well, I have to, you know, do the what ifs here and the rules and the put in my 2 cents. And recognize how many times as the adult do you just simply listen to your son and let him take the lead. And part of what that looks like is you have to be willing to have long pauses in your conversation and still be engaged. So my dad, this was so clear. My dad and I had a really tough decision to make around my mom's care. And so we sat outside in the lawn chairs for an entire afternoon. I am not kidding. And we talked, maybe we would talk 5 minutes, or he would ask a question and I would respond. And then it was 20 minutes of nothing, just simply sitting side by side. And then he'd have another snippet of conversation. And then another 10, 15 minutes would go by. But being willing to stay in that and stay engaged in that, I wasn't on my phone, I wasn't off doing the dishes, I was there and present. And yet, you know, there weren't a lot of words, but it was powerful, and he felt listened to and heard. And so being willing to unbusy yourself and be there and present. And I had another dad tell me, he said, you know, it took me so long to realize I was an adult before I realized that my mom, when I came home from middle school, would oftentimes be in the living room with a basket of laundry. And she would be folding clothes when I would come in, and I'd get my snack and I'd plop down in the living room, and she'd just be folding clothes. And we'd talk, or we wouldn't. But she was setting herself up to just be present and be there. And
I just want to point out that one thought that occurred to me, though, is we can't be sitting in the living room with a device.
Exactly.
Because that's not present. You could be doing anything except being on a device, and probably reading isn't a good idea either.
Right, right. Yeah, kind of doing something a little active. And now my podcast co-host would say she's told me, she said she actually does sit and scroll through her Facebook, and her boys will be there with their devices too. So, you know, every family's different, but
together,
it's the general theory of recognizing, I got it. And part of it's just that inward feeling of I'm just here and present with you. So, so critical. And our boys often don't make it easy because they're, you know, they just don't make communication easy. So again, it's up to us as the adults to create the moments. And I want to go back to what you said about not being a night person. And when my girls were in high school, they were in drama. So they were always out, often late at rehearsals. And I started laying on their beds when it was, you know, when they were out at night. So I'd just go into my daughter's room and read a book and fall asleep. But I would be there in their room when they got home. And of course, they're charged up and they got things to say. And it was lovely to wake up and engage in those conversations when they were ready to talk. I would have gotten a way different story the next morning.
Oh, absolutely. That, and I love that idea. I wish I had thought of that one, because that also lets me know they got home okay.
Sure.
But that was why, even when my girls were in high school, I picked them up from school for the same exact reason, mm-hmm. is when they got in the car, everything poured out.
Yes.
Whatever it was, in their own ways. You know, one, it verbally poured out. The other one would sit and it'd be quiet, but I can tell whether this was a good or a bad day.
Yeah,
and whatever it was would come out before we got home. Or I could ask and say, you know, hey, did anything happen today that was interesting or exciting or frustrating or whatever? So yeah, I love that with creating those spaces. But I want to go back for a second. So you gave this example about the principal's office, and I hear what you're telling me about communication. Mm-hmm. So if I have a son and he comes home from school and he got sent to the principal's office, what would be a good way of going about finding out what the heck happened and why and how he feels about it? Like, those are the three things I feel like I need to know as a parent.
Okay, so I'm going to take your last scenario about your girls getting in the car and having that everything pour out. So maybe you have gotten that call from school and you go to pick up your son. I'm going to challenge you, dear parents, to let your boy get in the car and give him a snack. Protein would be great. Give him some water and don't say anything in the car. Mm-hmm. Have silence, no music, no radio, because for a boy, often they get in the car from a day at school and they are done. They have had people talking at them, talking to them all day long, and they're exhausted. And especially if he's gotten in trouble. So let there be a big, long silence, unless, of course, he wants to talk. Great, then engage. But don't jump on him in that moment. Let him get home. Let him have some downtime. Maybe he goes outside. Maybe he gets snack, whatever. Give him some space. And then, important for any conversation is to give him a heads up. And say, you know, I did have a call from school today, and after you've had a snack and some downtime, I let's talk about it. So you're giving him a heads up ahead of time. You're not just springing on him in the moment and expecting his brain to be ready to engage. This works great for your husbands too. Hey, honey, I want to, you know, revisit that conversation tonight after dinner. Something like that. So he has some preparation time. So you've given him a little bit of time to chill and a little bit of time to go, okay, yeah, we're going to have this conversation. And then again, all the things that we've talked about, do something together. Maybe you're cooking dinner together but you're doing something and not expecting eye contact in that conversation. And then again, it's the little snippets and then the silence. Don't feel like you have to fill in the silence. It's so tempting for us as women. We always have something to say. And then again, it's that entering into the conversation in a open and neutral way so that you've got to work within yourself to not come down hard on him and do all of your expectations and the rules and all of those things. Be willing to listen deeply to what he has to say and believe him. Whatever his perspective is in that moment, believe him. And so, of course, you want to know what happened and why did it happen, but often you're not going to get as much backstory as you'd like. So you kind of got to go with what, you know, what you've heard and what he's willing to tell you. And then really our ultimate goal is that we want our kids to be able to self-advocate, self-regulate, and self-adjust, I would say. So what can you do differently? So it's more like this happened, this doesn't fit with our family values, and how are you going to repair it if there needs to be repair? Maybe he needs to apologize to someone. And what can you do differently? So it's all those kind of big questions, and it's so constant. We have to do this every day. And hopefully as they get older, you know, the conversations are fewer and farther between. But it doesn't serve for us to come down hard on him and, well, you know, you should have done it this way. It's more that we want to pull out of him. How are you feeling? What could have gone differently? And sometimes for our boys, we have to give them some words. Here's what you could have said to your friend. Here's, you know, when you go and talk to the teacher and make your apology, it could sound like this. And so not expecting that he has that vocabulary in him, we have to help him develop that over time.
It reminds me of the show that we did on seeing time and time management and how sometimes kids can't see that. And we just need to understand where they're at now. And even though they're 15, their executive function skills and their ability to see time might be equivalent to 14, 13, 12, or 10.
Yes.
And that's kind of what I hear you saying with the languaging is it doesn't matter their age. they may not have these words yet.
Yeah.
We need to give them the words. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
And there's no way that they would have known them if someone hasn't shown them, either through example or through these types of conversations. So as a parent, we go, okay, you know, all right, I didn't teach him to tie his shoes when he was 3. Time to do it now. Mm-hmm. We haven't given him this vocabulary yet. Let's do it now. But also accept that it's going to take some time.
Sure. And you may feel like we've had this conversation 100 times already, but if you remember, how many times did he have to practice tying his shoes? It's the same thing. And some boys just take longer to come to that. And, you know, I feel like this is an area, this whole social emotional piece is an area where we expect our boys and men to come with some facility in that area. And I believe that when we can just recognize the reality of, oh, this is really hard for him. His brain doesn't work. So it doesn't work that way. That's not his gift. So just like any practical life skill, this is a place where we can work on it and we can strive and do better. And even grown men will, you know, they appreciate the help as long as it's not done in a way to shame and embarrass him.
Well, and to accept that their way is not necessarily wrong. It's so ironic. At the time we're recording this, my husband and I just had a conversation within the last week. We were digging into, you know, one of our, those recurring frustration type things, right? Mm-hmm. And it came up because he asked me a question to which he could only see a yes or no answer. Mm-hmm. And I cannot give a yes or no answer. And this is something that's been going on for what we're celebrating our, our 28th wedding anniversary. Mm-hmm. And this has been going on for forever, but now we're, you know, we've been gaining more skills and we dug into it. And so we were able to look at it and realize that, okay, he only sees yes or no. So when I say something else, he feels like I'm ignoring him. I can't say yes or no because they both feel like a lie to me because I see so many shades of gray.
Yeah.
Neither one of us was right. Neither one of us was wrong. And we were able to talk about how to come to a middle ground. And I think this is important because you talked about that we have in many ways a very feminine culture. We do in the schools. We do oftentimes in when it comes to our home life because women are still primarily in charge of that area. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important for us to recognize that we're not necessarily the only way, we're not necessarily doing it the only way it can be done.
Right. And we have to recognize that how they process and how many men and boys communicate is not wrong. That's the thing. It's not wrong. And we often tend to make it wrong. And I think for many wives, women in partnership with men, we tend to also take things very personally. You know, your situation with your husband, you could take that really personally. Like, what's wrong with me? We'll often think, you know, well, he won't tell me how he feels, so he must not love me or like me. And we tend to go, because we're women, we tend to go to that feeling place and our feelings get hurt. When actually, you know, there he's standing telling you, I just need a yes or no answer. You're doing all the processing because you see all the gray. I have a good friend, couple friend, and they've been married too for like 30, 40 years. And the husband will tell me, he said, you know, I just wait until she's finished talking. Because usually she talks out loud and she processes and she comes up with the answer on her own. I don't even have to say anything. I just wait. That's all.
Exactly.
And so it's for us as women to recognize, oh, I am an outside processor. I come to resolve when I'm speaking all the different nuances, all the different gray. And recognizing he is really not engaged in that whole process, in that whole journey with you. And ultimately, he probably kind of does want a yes or no answer, ultimately. So you may want to say, like, I got a lot of different aspects of this that I'm considering here, and can we continue the conversation, or can you be patient with me while, can you work through this with me while, when, and be able to come up with a yes or no answer ultimately?
Yeah, I'll tell my husband, okay, you can check out. And then after I finish processing it, okay, time to check back in. So he doesn't have to try to follow all the processing.
That's so good.
And try to understand it, you know.
That's so good, yes.
You brought up that, you know, we get emotions involved in things. And I know in your work, when it comes to emotions, you talk about the boy code. Mm. So would you tell us about that?
Oh my gosh. We could do a whole nother show on the boy code.
Well, unfortunately, today we're not going to do it, but we can put that in the schedule. So today, can we go through, like, just in a nutshell, and maybe one thing that parents need to know about it, or one thing that we can do to help our boys, you know, live in the way that's good for them?
Yeah. So it's the boy code. It's the man box. It's that place where society and peer groups tell boys how to behave. And the one we hear all the time is, you know, man up, or boys don't cry. And for us as adults to recognize the constant bombardment of messages that our boys get on how they should behave. Girls get the same messaging, you know, in the same way. There is a little more broadness to girls' messaging, in that girls can do anything, wear anything, be anything. The landscape is not as broad for boys. So, quick story, a mom was in the store with her boy about 8 years old who wanted these pink sparkly tennis shoes. And the mom stood there going, okay. I mean, she was totally fine with him getting the pink sparkly shoes, but she knew what was going to happen when he wore those to school and what his friends were going to say. And so she debated, should I tell him? Should I not tell him? Should I just, you know, let him go and experience it? And she did end up saying, you know, well, if you get those shoes, just know that if you wear them to school, your friends might have some things to say about that. And she left it up to him whether to get the shoes. And he ended up ultimately not getting the shoes.
Which is, it's so sad for both him and her. You know,
absolutely,
as a parent, to be in that situation where you go, all I want to do is encourage my son to be himself.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. yet you also want to protect him from making himself a big, huge target.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a constant dilemma. It's not going to be easily fixed. But when we can start being aware of it, and we can see this messaging that comes from everywhere, it's what you said at the beginning about, you know, oh, boys need to have a six pack and they need to have muscles. And well, some boys, frankly, are never going to have a six pack. And that's not a focus in their life. Yet they're getting that cultural message of, that's how you look like a man. So it's speaking to those things and calling those out and educating your children on, you know, this is what, this is, get a magazine out, look at all the airbrushed images. These aren't real images of real people. And how can you, educate yourself about that and just know, oh yeah, this isn't real. And it's a constant.
Just be having those conversations, because we're talking to teenagers who, yes, they don't have their entire frontal lobe developed.
Right.
But we can still have intelligent conversation with them, even when they're short or to the point. But just to start saying, hey, you know, we realize that there's this cultural message. And we believe in this in our family. We believe you should be able to be you. We also understand that there are things that will happen out in the world because of choices we make. No, we're always with you. But, you know, not one big, huge conversation. Like you said,
right,
these tiny things.
Yeah.
And I also just want, before we totally wrap up here, I just want to point out, this conversation has been about things to understand about our boys and to do with our boys. And there is also a responsibility for us in this conversation to be talking to our girls to make sure that they understand these things, that they understand some of the pressures that these boys and young men are under. And a little bit of hope to the parents of boys, I listen to my girls. I listen to them with their friends through high school, through college. Yes, you hear, oh, he's cute or this or that. But when it comes down to it, when I hear them discussing relationships, when I hear them talking about, well, my two girls were having a conversation. We were, I can't remember if we were decorating or undecorating the Christmas tree. I think they were home when we were taking it down because it was only the three of us. Dad wasn't around. And they had this in-depth conversation about what they wanted in someone that they would spend the rest of their life with.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting to be the fly on the wall. And hopeful thing is that what they were saying that they wanted were the things that we actually want for our boys. Mm-hmm. They weren't saying that they wanted a guy with a six pack or whatever.
Right.
They were looking for men with heart and values.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, but that's, you know, that's that flip side of we need to be talking to our girls as well as our boys. We need to be creating that, basically that culture of acceptance of however mm-hmm. people are wired.
Yeah. Yes, definitely acceptance. And that starts with understanding the nuances, understanding the differences and accepting them and not trying to make our, especially our little boys, be like little girls.
Yeah. So it just kind of, you know, summing this up a little bit. It's, we started talking with just these heartbreaking ideas and this quote, I wrote it down because you said it. And I was just like, oh my goodness. The little boy comes home and says, all the girls are perfect and I'm the bad one. And that is just a message for us as parents to remember that there is a culture out there that doesn't necessarily fit our child and especially our boys. So we need to become aware of it. We need to be talking to them in a way that works for them and with them. And in doing that, we need to teach them. And a few of the key things, Janet, that you taught us were to be open to opportunities when he's ready to open up. Mm-hmm. Don't expect eye contact. Listen, don't talk, allow for long pauses. Just be there and be present. And doing that will let him feel listened to and heard. And that will also let our boys know that we are actually there for them. And then we also want to be teaching them to self-advocate. So instead of if they get in trouble, if something happens, if or even, you know, self-advocating amongst peer groups and things, talking to them about going, okay, so this is what happened. You know, if it's something that they did that really, it goes against our family values or our family rules or against the grain. You can say, you know, how will you repair it? What can you do differently? But also ask them how they were feeling when this happened. And I love that, Allison. I think that is key in helping them really know that we're there for them, that this yeah. isn't just about sculpting them, that this is about loving them. And then lastly, remember that there is a boy code in our society, that our boys are constantly bombarded by messages about how they are supposed to be. And we need to be aware of that and start making them aware that this is the way that the culture is, and that will help them to not cave into that. So Allison, you have a website and a podcast. Would you please share those for anyone who wants to check that out and get some more boy info?
Absolutely. So boysalive.com is the website, and I do have a very active Facebook group. So I invite your listeners to join us. You can just search Boys Alive on Facebook and you'll find that. And the podcast is On Boys, and you'll find that anywhere that you get your podcasts. So Apple Podcasts and all the Stitcher, all those platforms. And you can always, always reach out to me directly at janet@boysalive.com. I am here in support and advocacy. It's a lot. I mean, we haven't even scratched the surface in this time together. And yet, I hope that your listeners are now a little more aware and will have their eyes opened and be watching and see these situations that arise every single day, and that you, all of your listeners, become staunch advocates for boys, even if they're raising girls, because, you know, those boys are going to grow up to be our fathers and our fathers of our grandchildren, right? I hope someday. So it's all about raising us all up, and it's increasing our understanding and our humanity and our acceptance of each other.
Perfect. Perfect. So that wraps our show today. Thank you so much for being here with us today, Mighty Parents. Remember, you're here, you're listening, you are a Mighty Parent. We have more for you at mightyparenting.com. So don't forget to go there and check out the other resources and support available for you. And I will see you next week.